This episode is about children's author and illustrator Teresa Flavin, and she is being interviewed by her niece, Alicia, who is one of my students. And check out Teresa's website. Her books are absolutely fantastic. And go check it out. So, enjoy.
Okay. It says it is recording, so I'm going to hope for the best.
Fantastic.
Right. Okay. Tell us a bit about your journey to becoming an illustrator and an author.
Right. Well, I always was interested in art ever since I was a young kid. Very crafty, loved drawing. My parents sent me to some art classes when I was a kid, sort of Saturdays and things, which I loved. And I pretty much realized that I wanted to be an illustrator because I knew that there were people who made the beautiful pictures in my books. I had a few treasured like fairy tale books when I was a kid, and I absolutely loved those pictures. And I thought, right, that's what I want to do. And when I learned that that's what an illustrator could do, I decided that art school was the place for me. And I really focused in high school on taking as many art classes as I could and just getting my skills up there so that I could get into Massachusetts College of Art and Design in Boston. And the reason I wanted to go there was because it's the only public, I think it still is actually, the only public arts university in the country, art school in the country. And I could afford it. I could work an extra job and afford to go there and pay the tuition. And I knew that it would be a route to becoming an illustrator. And once I finished at art school, I had a couple of years of kicking around working and trying to get bits and pieces of illustration work. And you have to remember that this is pre-digital times. So my career spans the time before the internet and after the internet, which I'm really glad about. And at the time I thought, okay, this is tough finding work. So maybe I'm going to take some time and hone my skills and spend some more time developing my work and also get a qualification to teach art because I was quite interested in doing that too. So I went to Syracuse University, their School of Visual Arts, to do a master's in fine arts in illustration. And while I was there, I focused on illustrating children's books with a fantastic and very well-known illustrator at the time, the late Charles Michalacek. I would spell the name if I could, but I'll send it to you. Charles Michalacek was a fantastic illustrator of fairy tales, all kinds of books, and was very, very inspiring. And I had never really thought about illustrating children's books before, but doing his class and working on illustrating some fairy tales, it really inspired me to take that as a direction. So when I finished graduate school, I moved back to Boston and began a saga of sending samples of my work out to the big publishing houses in New York City. And at the time, that was a really big deal because there was no internet to look up names and addresses. You had to spend time looking through books and doing your research to figure out who to send your work to. And in those days, you could actually go to New York City, make an appointment and drop your portfolio off. And the art directors in the publishing houses would look through your work, leave you a note, maybe saying, you know, yes, we like your work, let's see more. Or if you were really lucky, they might interview you and go through the portfolio with you. So I spent a number of years doing that, going back and forth to New York and met lots of amazing art directors. So finally, after a lot of attempts and determination, I got my first book and I never looked back. It began my career.
What was your first book?
My first book was called Charlie's House, by an author called Clyde Robert Bulla. And I believe it had been illustrated once before, and I was re-illustrating it. And it was a historical tale about a boy who is kidnapped here in England, and by what they called, I think it was a press gang. Press gangs went around and they would grab young guys and stick them on a boat. They'd put them into the Navy and they'd send them over to the colonies to fight their wars and be indentured servants. And so Charlie is sent over to the US and has all sorts of adventures. And so it was a really interesting and demanding first project, because I had to do a lot of research on costumes and houses and what things looked like at that time, because it was set in the 18th century. So that was it kind of set the tone for my career, really, because I've done quite a lot of historical illustration.
What are the differences between being an illustrator and an author?
Right. Well, you can be both. So you can be an author who also illustrates, or an illustrator who also writes books. Most often you have a kind of a delineation between the two. So most of the time you will have a professional author who writes the manuscript, comes up with the story, and then the publisher assigns an illustrator to illustrate that work. So one of the things that was interesting to learn when I first started out was that because I was a beginning illustrator and had not done any books before, I was placed with Mr. Bulla for his book, and he was, I think, well known at the time and certainly well respected. And so, you know, I was a young person doing my first book, and the book was written by somebody who, you know, was much more established than me. And that was the case with my next books as well, where I was placed with, you know, established authors. And generally the illustrator is tasked with interpreting the text, illuminating it, pulling out the most important aspects of it, being able to pace the story. So sometimes you're given a manuscript and it's literally just the story and there are no breaks for the different pages. And so you have to figure that out yourself and suggest how you might break up that text and distribute it across the book. And that's something that's really enjoyable to do. And that's the illustrator's skill, is to be able to really enhance the text and illuminate it and kind of put your mark on it as well. And the interesting thing that I think some people don't realize is that often the illustrator never meets the author. I certainly never have met any of mine. And we work quite separately and maybe have an email back and forth or whatever, but generally the manuscript comes first, the publisher, and the publisher works on the editing, and then the manuscript is sent to the illustrator. And the illustrator then does all the sketches, mocks the whole thing up, and there's lots of back and forth between the publisher, the editors, the art directors, the illustrators, to get everything right. And then you go through the whole process of creating the final art, sending all of that, either in scans or as original art back to the publishing house. And then they have to go through the whole production process of getting everything made into the books and distributed. So it's a really exciting and interesting process.
So how do you deal with biases and stereotypes in children's and young adult literature?
That's a really interesting one. I started as an illustrator many years ago. So, you know, I have been around for quite a long time, and I have seen how the world of children's literature has developed a lot. And recently, especially with the emphasis and intention to have more diverse voices, it's really great. When I started out, there was certainly awareness and intention, and there was a push to have multicultural books and to have diversity in the books. I was very aware of books that were already out there that maybe were, you know, showed some biases towards towards groups, or, and obviously was super aware of this when I was asked to illustrate diverse characters, for example. And I remember from the very start, research was a huge part of this, that I wanted to make sure that if I was asked to illustrate a person from a person of color from a particular community, that I needed to make sure that whatever I did was respectful and accurate and appropriate and very well crafted and you know, the best of my ability. So in all my books, I mean, this is a real thing for me, research and taking the time at the beginning to make sure that, you know, I am really being respectful and covering all the bases. That's just been very important to me. So for example, the book that you've been looking at, which is written by fantastic author Joseph Bruschak, who's himself Native American, this book called Pushing Up the Sky, and it's seven Native American plays. It's one of my favorite books. It's one that I love to illustrate, and it set the challenge of illustrating people, costumes, environments from seven different parts of North America. And it was very, very crucial for me that I did this with the utmost respect, and that, you know, I made sure that, you know, I really wanted to know what each specific tribe, down to the detail, as much as I could possibly do, you know, find out what was appropriate, you know, in the tools, the housing, everything, just so that I was just doing it justice. And that's always been incredibly important to me. And I think that one of the things that has changed since I got started, and is one of the really great things, is that there are many, many more authors and illustrators from the communities, marginalized communities, and I think this is fantastic, because there are many more people who can bring, you know, so much, well, I don't know how to put this, but just bring lots more to the stories from their own cultures. And so this is something that's been really great to see, and needs to happen more.
So how do you deal with writer's block?
Ooh, writer's block. Right. Okay. So I'm going to switch gears here, and just sort of, I should probably preface my answer by saying that, I was illustrating for a number of years, mostly picture books, but also quite a lot of educational materials, mostly for the United States, but some in the United Kingdom. And all kinds of stuff, and you know, was very busy with all of that. And then I kind of came to a point where I thought I might perhaps like to write my own story rather than illustrating somebody else's story. And I had tried a few times to write something, and you know, children's picture book manuscripts have to be incredibly short, concise. Every word counts. And I just found that even though I made a few attempts at it, I kept writing longer and longer stories. And I realized that actually what I probably wanted to do was write novels for young people, probably sort of 8 to 12, 8 to 14 age group. So that's what I did. I ended up writing four novels, three novels and one novella for that sort of middle grade age group. And that became a whole sort of other element of what I do. And I stopped illustrating other people's books so much and started focusing on my own. So what that has meant is coming up with my own ideas for longer stories, like the Black Hope Enigma trilogy, which were the first three books I wrote, which are mysteries, and they're set in the British Isles, and involve Renaissance paintings and painting techniques and all kinds of historical weirdness that I discovered that went into those books. So they're sort of quite different from the work that I was illustrating. And at the moment, it's interesting that you ask about writer's block, because I've been working on a new manuscript, what we call a standalone novel, which means that it's unlikely that it would grow a sequel or become part of a series. So this one I've been working on for quite a long time, and I'm now on the fourth version of it. And there have been times where, yes, there has been some writer's block. I've gotten stuck, or I've kind of thought, oh, that's not a great direction to go in. What do I do next? Or, you know, having to rejig the entire thing. Luckily, I have a very patient agent who reads what I come up with and pretty much kind of tells me what she thinks. And I completely trust her judgment. She really knows her stuff. And so, and I truly believe that working with editors, art directors, agents, you know, a book is not just a solo effort. It involves other professionals who have loads of experience and know what goes into a good book and what is manageable, marketable. And so, you know, I really, really trust my agent's opinion on things. And so I have been going over and over and over, and I'm on the fourth iteration of this idea. I think I've kindly hit it. I'm almost there. I'm working on it right now. But I'll tell you, the best antidote to writer's block for me is just sitting myself down in the seat, putting a timer on for 45 minutes and just writing. And not stopping to assess what I've been doing, but literally just sit there and just write. Even if it just comes out as a bunch of rubbish that I need to get rid of later, at least when you get something down on paper, you can edit it later, or you can sort of take what's working out of it and get rid of the rest. So I think the discipline of showing up every day and saying, okay, you know, even if I only get an hour's worth of writing done, or even 15 minutes, you do a little bit every day and you begin to get into the habit. And there's a fantastic book that a friend gave me for Christmas last year called The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. And he's a writer who's very honest about his own battles with writing and getting published. And he thinks that basically writer's block is procrastination, and you just need to kind of sit yourself down and just work through it. And I find that that works the best for me. It doesn't mean that every day is great, but I think, you know, you'd be astonished at how much you can actually accomplish by just doing 15 minutes a day, if that's the bare minimum. And I think it does kind of free you up from being too precious about things too. So another tip I would have for anybody who's having writer's block would be something from a book called The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, which came out many years ago, but is a fantastic book for dealing with creative journeys. And she suggests sitting down every morning with three pieces of paper and just writing longhand, just writing whatever's in your head, just write it down. You know, even if it's just, I need to buy cat food and I need to do laundry and, oh, I hate doing laundry. And boy, I keep having to buy cat food. But, you know, you sort of get the that kind of stuff out of your head and onto paper. And then you begin to maybe start, you know, maybe coming up with some ideas as you're writing, or even just sort of letting loose your worries about what you're writing. So that's kind of an interesting exercise to do in the mornings, is to sort of get some of that stuff out of the way and then make some space for the writing, the real writing that you want to do on your creative project.
How do you keep, what do you keep? What do you do to keep what you write like exciting and new?
That's a great question, because again, that's something that's really happening for me at the moment. And it's kind of, I guess maybe sort of my intention to sort of change things up once in a while. So when I first got writing novels, and honestly, I had a little bit of creative writing experience in college. And then after that, I really didn't do any except, you know, bits and pieces on my own. So when I started writing novels, I really had to learn about the craft of creating a cohesive story that's structured and that works and that someone will want to read. And so, you know, I had to learn a lot about how that works and the mechanics of storytelling. And so in the beginning, you know, because of the way things went with my publishers the first time around, I was, you know, really planning out a lot ahead of time. So, for example, after the first novel came out, we decided to do a second and make it a series. And so I needed to write like little summaries of each chapter ahead of time and give them to the publisher so that they would understand that I knew what I was doing, that I had a story there. So that meant maybe, I don't know, say 30 chapters. So with maybe a line or two for each chapter, and it kind of structured the whole thing. And that was my blueprint for writing the novel after that. So at the moment with the one that I'm doing right now, I am writing a synopsis first. So that's basically about 600 words, maybe a little bit longer, kind of a page of the very bare bones of what the story is about and what happens in it. And it is, I find it very hard to do. I just want to get into the story, but if you actually ask me what the story is about, I have to really stop and think about it. So it's a very good discipline. So that is something I've been doing at the moment, is trying to really play around with ideas and get them into a 600 word synopsis. And then from there, I start, you know, building the what's going to happen in the book and start writing it, drafting it. I've already drafted this story once and then restructured it a second time, had another effort, and then now I'm on the fourth version, which has, and each of them has changed incredibly. So at the moment, to get to that 600 word synopsis, I'm playing around with outlining. So things like making mind maps and taking sticky notes and writing, you know, ideas on them and rearranging them. Another way that I might do it is take index cards and write scenes on them and then move them around. So I'm trying to really enjoy the journey and just play with it. So that kind of keeps it fresh for me. It allows me to not take myself too seriously, but to play, and also to ask a lot of what if questions. So a lot of what I do in terms of coming up with ideas is to say, oh, I have this character here, and then we have an antagonist here. What if, you know, they meet on a cruise ship? What if they met on a, you know, the sun, you know, and in a spaceship or something? I mean, you ask a lot of crazy what if questions and play around with ideas a lot. And, you know, and sometimes the craziest ideas are the ones that actually work the best. So at the moment, outlining and writing a synopsis. So inescapable work of writing a big book.
So what difficulties have you come across in the children's / young authors literature world?
Interesting.
Could be anything from like publishing to writing, or just some difficulties.
Yeah, a couple of things come to mind. I mean, obviously we've talked a little bit about diversity. So, you know, that diversity in children's literature is a very huge issue at the moment. And there's a real push, and rightly so, for increased representation of people from diverse communities and diverse characters and experiences, so that children can read about characters who are like themselves, you know. So that is happening. It needs to happen a lot more. So that is something that there's a lot of awareness about, and it is developing. I think this year in particular, it's, you know, that it's really been in conversation. I see a lot on social media, lots of discussions and awareness, growing awareness about this. So that's great, but it has come out of difficulty, I think. Then I would say 2020 is a challenging year across the board, and I think that, you know, at the moment without getting into a huge amount of detail about what's been going on, we all know what's been happening this year. It's been challenging for people in the publishing industry because, like for everybody else, companies have had to make changes to working practices. And I know that everything has slowed down. Certainly there are books coming out still. And I have friends who have books literally coming out right around now. I mean, a number of them in the last couple of weeks. And they're all having to move their launches and all of their celebrations of their new books online, which, you know, has a positive side also, because it means that, you know, if you do an online launch about your book, it means that maybe somebody on the other side of the world is able to attend, which normally wouldn't happen. But I think people are missing the face-to-face contact. And that, on top of that, many children's authors and illustrators visit schools and libraries and book festivals and conventions, and all of that has come to a close. Most people seem to have moved this online, so they're talking to schools and libraries. If it works, they're able to broadcast talks to schools and keep the conversation going that way. But I think it has been immensely challenging, and I think that in terms of publishing schedules, books coming out next year, I think there will be delays. So that's very tough on authors who've been working very hard on books, and editors and publishers who've been, working hard to bring those books out. So that's been very, very challenging. Another thing that has been tough, a couple more things I can think of that are challenges to publishing, is that, children are doing many more screen-based activities rather than reading. They play games, which is great, absolutely fine. Gaming and, watching TV and videos and films and doing sort of television-based stuff, streaming. But that means time away from reading. On the other hand, again, I know that book sales for children went up quite a bit in the spring because of the pandemic. Children were at home and learning from home. So there was some, uptick in sales of children's books. So, there are positives and negatives. But I think that, the fact that there's much more screen-based activity these days means that there's just more competition for reading. And, we want kids to be reading as much as possible. So that's a really tricky one. And, of course, authors' salaries, the amount of money that authors earn from writing books and illustrators from illustrating them, that has not gone up particularly. That's sort of stagnated. So earnings, are a challenge for authors too. And so there are things that make it tough sometimes in publishing, but we all keep going because we love it.
Have you ever thought about getting into the online world? I know I'm going off script. I'm going off script, but like, have you ever thought about making like an online book or anything?
Not so much. I mean, my books, several of them are available as ebooks. So you can certainly, the publishers have put them out there as ebooks. So that's available. And I certainly have, I'm available to do online talks to schools. I've changed my events page so that, I do offer online capacity if schools want to do that. So we'll see. It's something that's pretty new to me. But on the other hand, I think, I like so many other people, have gotten used to using online platforms and, conferencing and, we're all just kind of doing it. And I think that nothing beats the experience of being face to face with a group of readers, young readers. That's one of the things I love about this business. What I do is the ability to go into a classroom or into a library or into a big tent at a festival and interact with people who are excited about reading your books, or maybe they've already read your books and they want to talk to you about them. And so the face-to-face contact, the chat, the sort of the conversations face to face, I really do miss those. And even though it's great to do online and it's opened up a world of, you know, people around the world being able to participate, which is good. It nothing beats the face-to-face for me personally.
All right, to our last question, the big one.
Okay.
What is your writing / illustrating philosophy?
Ooh, yeah, I've never really thought about whether I have a philosophy. It's an interesting one. I'm glad you brought it up because I think I will now like write a little manifesto for myself about what's important to me.
There's a big thing in education where we have to have like an educational philosophy kind of
right.
in the College of Ed. So I was just curious. Yeah.
Well, I think there are a few things and I've already touched on, I think two or three really important things. I think, I mean, obviously the whole idea of respect and research, you know, in terms of the way that I represent characters, places, historical events, you know, I've always wanted to work in a very respectful, appropriate, and accurate way as far as I can. So that's critical to me. And I think in terms of even my novels, which are adventure novels, they're mystery adventures, they're you know, rollicking reads, they also still are, you know, they're based on historical events, they're based on real things, real, you know, the world of art or the world of certain supernatural ideas or folkloric ideas. So I do a lot of research on all of those things before I put pen to paper. So I think, you know, really just not writing things off the top of my head, but really giving them some substance is important to me. The other thing I would say in terms of my philosophy is that I don't write violent books. I'm not into violence. That, you know, sometimes bad things happen to characters in my books, but they are contextualized and they have to. I don't like senseless violence and there's no need for it. The age range I write for is, you know, upper middle grade, and it's just, yeah, I don't feel it's appropriate for me to go there for the age group that I write for. I certainly put a little tiny bit of romance into my stories, but nothing further. You know, I think, you know, I don't feel I need to go there. That there are books in the YA sort of range that get much more into teenage experiences and stuff. So for the age group I'm interested in, I think I keep it, you know, tolerance of differences, diversity, you know, low violence, no violence if possible, and, you know, positive learning journeys. The characters go through journeys and there's positive endings, even though difficult things may happen along the way in the story. So yeah, I guess, I don't know if that's a philosophy, but that's what I aim to do. But, you know, also to write really fun page turner books, you know, books that you really entertain and that, you know, excite you. I loved mysteries when I was a kid. I loved books like Encyclopedia Brown and Nancy Drew, all the sort of Nancy Drew type books, loved solving mysteries. So that has come across into my books. I like puzzles, mysteries, and I think a lot of kids do. So again, they need to kind of, for me, they need to be a bit more contemporary. I tend to write stories about contemporary kids in strange situations, maybe strange like time slip adventures where they go back in time or they meet somebody, a supernatural being, or, you know, there's some weird stuff that happens in the stories, but the characters are generally pretty much grounded in contemporary times. So yeah, that's kind of my thing, I guess.
Okay, well, thank you for taking time to interview with me.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Alicia.
All right.